What I wish they knew is that there are a lot of complexities with this next stage of life, and caregiving is a huge piece of that.
Welcome to The Lisa Show, where we take a good look at life. As a teenager, I remember hearing a conversation my parents were having with their siblings about how my grandma shouldn't be driving anymore. They said things like, "She should know," or "It's getting dangerous." And I thought, well, if it's so clear, why wouldn't everyone just be on the same page? Just tell her, sheesh, it's not that complicated. Oh boy, don't you just love the decisiveness and confidence of a teenager? So clear, right? Well, yeah, no, not at all. My parents will kill me if I say this on the podcast, but they are now the elderly age my grandma used to be when they were having that conversation. The problem is that they do not identify as old, so talking to them about this stuff is hard. I mean, I don't blame them. I don't like it when my kids make jokes about me getting older. Sure, I don't know how to use all the TVs in my house or know how they work. They're all different. I didn't set them up. Or how to turn on all the safety features on my phone. But you know what? I taught them how to eat food with a fork and how to read. So let's just settle down when it comes to telling me what to do. Yeah, the irony is not lost on me. It is hard to talk about issues surrounding aging with your parents. It's fraught with emotion and lost independence and dread of the unknown. And I stand by this, and it's why I'm talking about it on the podcast. It is worse if you don't talk about these things and just see what happens. So that's why I brought my friend Alan Ormsby into the studio today. Alan is a state director for AARP, or the American Association of Retired Persons. He's devoted his career to helping the retired community get the resources they need, so I knew he was the perfect person to ask about helping our aging parents. Today, he's going to touch on several things that should be on our radars as inevitable caregivers, including who should be on your parents' care team, which medical and legal documents you'll need, the safety hazards you should watch out for, preventing and dealing with scams, how to approach the driving dilemma, what you should know about mental health, and signs to look for that your parent may need additional care. Yep, we're covering it all because all of this is important. So here's Alan.
So my name is Alan Ormsby, and I'm the state director for AARP in Utah.
Okay, so I get the letter. I turn 50. I make a joke of it because it's like, I didn't think this day would come. I think I'm a little bit too young. Why are we getting these letters at 50?
Yeah, so AARP really does focus our efforts on everybody from 50 and older. But once you turn 50, you really are starting to kind of shift gears a little bit into, okay, what's the next big piece of my life? And so, yeah, we feel like at 50, people are starting to think about, they're not thinking about retirement at 50, but they're starting to think, have I done enough? Am I prepared? What's going to happen to me as a caregiver? Am I going to need care as I get older? There's lots of thinking that goes along those lines at starting around 50.
Do you feel that most people are prepared for these scenarios?
No, I don't think most people at 50 are even close to being prepared.
I suspected that. You're talking to one of your friends and you know, oh, they are not ready. What do you wish that they knew?
What I wish they knew is that there are a lot of complexities with this next stage of life. And caregiving is a huge piece of that. Chances are pretty good. Most of them have had some caregiving experience with their children. But chances are also pretty good that their parents are relatively healthy, they're relatively stable, and they don't recognize that in maybe 10 years, 12 years, when they're loved ones are now pushing 80, 85. There's a very different set of needs than when our parents are in their young 70s.
The tables will turn. Mine are definitely at a steep slant right now, so I know I'm barreling towards a new phase with my parents. And it's not just me. We will find ourselves needing to care for the parents that once cared for us. While this can be a tricky transition to navigate, Alan says the first step is to identify ourselves as caregivers now so we can start planning for the future.
I think the biggest challenge for most people who are caregivers is they don't think about it until the crisis hits, right? And the other piece of this, I think, that people forget is identifying themselves as caregivers. So a good example, I'll just share from my life. I've been going over to my mom's house and taking care of her yard for 10 or 12 years. Not because she's not capable. She is perfectly capable to go outside, but she does not like to run the lawnmower. She doesn't like to have to start it, and she doesn't like to have to use it. And so I've been doing that. Am I a caregiver? Yeah, I am. And most people would not recognize that. They would say to themselves, oh, I just helped my mom out a little bit. Every single person who does any kind of caregiving really needs to identify themselves as a caregiver, because then they can start thinking, oh, okay, what do I need to do to prepare? Because right now, my mom is perfectly healthy. She lives on her own. She drives her own car. She gets her own groceries. But what's going to happen at that moment when she says, I'm not sure I feel safe to drive anymore? I'm not sure that I can walk up and down my stairs safely anymore. I'm not sure that the tripping hazards that are in my house are not going to cause me to have a bad fall. That's when people hopefully will go, oh yeah, I'm a caregiver. I've been a caregiver. And now I can think about all the preparation that I need to do to go a little deeper into that caregiving journey. I hope everybody understands that as a caregiver, the journey is awesome, right? I would never trade the Saturdays that I spend at my mom's house for the world. I'm going to get emotional. Jeez, sorry.
No, don't apologize.
But I know that she thinks of that sometimes as a burden, and I want her to know that it's not. I think every caregiver wants to have those really tender, sweet moments with the people that they love. So hoping that people understand caregiving is not a burden, but it is a journey. And it can be both the most rewarding period of our times and the hardest period of our lives. Yeah. Sorry, I get
all misty
over here.
Caregiving can be hard, but it doesn't have to be a burden. In fact, it can actually be a beautiful and bonding experience. But we won't see the beauty or enjoy the bonding if we're burned out or trying to do everything on our own. That's why Alan says that as caregivers, we need to form a team.
The first thing is start thinking about forming a team. Who are your experts? Who are the people that surround you that you can turn to for, you know, a shoulder to cry on, for some legal assistance, because that's a big issue, substituted decision making, and who gets to make those choices? Healthcare related issues, that's such a heavy thing to have to try and carry when not only are you caring for someone you love, but now you're the translator. The doctor is telling you certain things, and they're telling the parents certain things, or they're telling your spouse certain things. And you've got to be the person who's there kind of paying attention to all those things so you can translate it later. Those are really heavy things. So you don't want to carry these burdens alone if you can help it. And so thinking about, you know, the members of your family and being really thoughtful and broad about what each of those people can bring. Who's the great lawnmower? Who's the person who can fix minor plumbing leaks? All those little things, start kind of putting your family and your friends and the neighborhood together as a team to surround people. I think that's really the first step.
Who is on your team? It's time to start filling out your roster now so the weight of helping our parents doesn't have to fall solely on our shoulders. No one's shoulders are broad enough to carry those responsibilities on their own without breaking. So lean into the resources around you, including your extended family, your neighborhood, and your community. Many hands make light work. Alan says a member that should be on everyone's caregiving team is called the Area Agency on Aging.
There are so many really good resources that people can kind of think through. Getting to know the local area agencies on aging, I think, is one of the very, very best things. Okay, so back in the 1960s, they created something called the Older Americans Act. It's the Meals on Wheels people, but they do a whole lot more than just Meals on Wheels. So every county in the entire country is covered by an area agency on aging. People in the aging world will call them AAAs. And so you'll hear people say, oh, you should get in touch with your local AAA. It's not the folks who come and help change your tires.
Got it. Although they do great work.
They do great work.
Thank you for your service.
Right?
Yes.
These are the area agencies on aging.
And this is everywhere across the country.
Everywhere across the country. In fact, there's websites where you can go and you can find an 800 number that you can call and they'll tell you where your local area agency is. These are folks who are experts on all aspects of aging. Like I say, if your loved one needed Meals on Wheels, they're the people you would call. They can do in-home assessments. They can be the people that you call to say, I need grab bars in the shower. Who do I contact? And they'll have a list of contractors that, you know, can come and help put grab bars in your home. They might even be able, based on, you know, eligibility, they might be able to pay for those kinds of things. There are day programs. There's respite care. Some of those things will be potentially paid for depending on, you know, your asset level and things like that. So having them as a resource is a really, really good thing. And no one knows about
them. I was going to say, this is news to me.
Yeah.
Wow. If you remember nothing else, remember the name Area Agency on Aging, or AAA. This should be your first stop for finding resources and answers to your questions. After I spoke with Alan, I decided to poke around on the internet to see if I could find my own area agency on aging. And not only was it the first search result that came up, but it had resources I didn't even know I needed. One of the most helpful pages I found was one devoted to advanced care planning. Caregivers will inevitably need a slew of documents, but the Area Agency on Aging says that there are a few documents you'll want to start with. I'll let Alan explain.
So probably the first thing that people need to think about is who's going to do substituted decision making for your medical care? An advance directive is the first thing that probably most people who have a loved one who's maybe going to eventually not be able to make their own decisions. Mm-hmm. That's the first step. And if you do it now, while the person has capacity, it's so much easier. So think about that as a first step. Another great form is what's called the Provider Order for Life-Sustaining Treatment, or PULSED. This replaces the old school DNR bracelets, the Do Not Resuscitate bracelets. This isn't one you can fill out on your own. It's one you fill out with a doctor. It's a standing physician's order. The medical profession wants to do the right thing for everybody. They want to give people dignity. They want to honor people's wishes. But if they don't know what those wishes are, they have to revert back to baselines. And those baselines include a lot of really intrusive, invasive kinds of things that maybe we wouldn't want and maybe are really, really hard. And the other piece of this is that once those medical interventions start, it's really hard to reverse them.
If you don't make these decisions ahead of time for yourself or for your loved one, they will be made for you.
Exactly,
and it may
right.
create more problems. And that's why we need to talk about it now, right?
Have those hard conversations now while people are, you know, competent and not on a breathing tube, because that's going to be the best time to do it.
Okay, so let me pause right here because I know that was a lot of information to take in. Alan talked about two important documents that our parents should have. The first is an advanced care directive. These can be part of a living will or trust. And if you'd like more information on what those are, please listen to our episode with estate planner Callie Stillman. Super helpful. It's important to get an advanced care directive now before your parents can't make their own medical decisions. Knowing you're doing exactly what your loved ones wanted you to do for their care will give you peace of mind you cannot imagine. As someone who has had to make some of those decisions, trust me, It's important. And the second document you might want to get is called a Provider Order for Life-Sustaining Treatment, or POLST for short, P-O-L-S-T. This is the one your parents will need to fill out with their doctor to make sure that emergency responders and medical providers act in accordance with their wishes. Another document you'll need is what's called a Durable Power of Attorney. This will help when it comes to your parents' finances.
So one of the things that you probably want to think about, too, in terms of legal protections is a durable power of attorney. A power of attorney basically means that I give you authority to step into my shoes and do certain things for me. We call it a durable power of attorney because that means it's going to survive the person becoming incapacitated. So even if a person becomes incapacitated, we want to make sure that there's someone who's going to take care of their bills, take care of the issues and challenges that they might have selling a home or, you know, disposing of property, helping them do whatever it is that they need to be done financially. And if you don't do that, it becomes very complicated and expensive. You have to go to court and get a conservatorship or a guardianship, and that can be thousands and thousands of dollars. And it's not always the right person, right? Mom or dad might have chosen son number two, and everybody in the family wants son number four. And all of a sudden, there are fist fights breaking out, and we don't want to see any of that, right?
Literally.
Yeah,
you've seen this. And so you can avoid that by having the conversation ahead of time.
That's exactly right. Yeah, you can have that by putting your financial tools in place. You know, anything that creates a lot of stress in a family, there probably is a legal solution to do now that's going to avoid those problems.
I want to repeat what Alan said. There is probably a legal solution to anything that creates stress in a family, and a durable power of attorney is one of those solutions. So are advanced care directives. Now, I know that initiating these types of conversations with our parents will be uncomfortable. Quite frankly, I'd rather floss with barbed wire. But I'll tell you what I dread more than that, and that's the family drama and not doing right by my parents. They deserve to have a voice in how their future plays out. So get the documents that can make sure that happens. We've talked about the two biggest concerns when it comes to caregiving, and that's medical and financial planning. But as you know, there are a lot of other day-to-day concerns that come with aging parents. The first is how to prevent falls. And this is no small detail. Falls always seem to come out of nowhere, and they can have devastating consequences on physical and mental decline.
Falls tend to be the beginning of the end. Why is a fall so bad? Well, there's several reasons. The first is your head is pretty far from the ground.
Yeah.
And when you are older, you're not always great at putting your hands out in front of yourself. You're not always great about catching yourself in any kind of way. And so when a person falls, frequently they will have brain injuries. And if a person does fall, you really do need to kind of go into concussion protocol mode and think about them as having a brain injury. Many doctors are not super familiar with older adults. And when older adults fall, they don't always think to themselves, oh, that person has a brain injury. But we've done some research. I'm part of the Falls Coalition for Utah, and there's some great people who've done some amazing research, and they find that people have brain injuries in more than half of all falls. Even minor falls, there are brain injuries, concussions.
Over half.
Yeah, over half.
So this is a big concern. Can we prevent it?
Yes, there are some really cool evidence-based programs. And, you know, again, this is where the area agencies on aging, they really come in handy. A lot of these programs are at senior centers. There's a program called Stepping On that's an evidence-based program that helps people who are at risk of falls. The other thing that is, you know, a big deal is just looking around our environment and figuring out, is that area rug really doing what it's supposed to? Is that naughty cat who constantly is rubbing up against my mom's legs, is that cat going to trip her and hurt her somehow? When she walks out the front door, if there isn't a really good, well-scraped, icy porch, is she going to fall on that? Mm-hmm. Can I put a simple rail up? These are the kinds of things that, you know, it's not a lot of effort, but if you don't think about it, if you wait until the fall happens, man, things are really bad at that point.
Yeah, take a minute to look around.
I knew that cognitive abilities decline with age, but it hadn't crossed my mind that falls could affect my parents' brains so dramatically. From concussions to broken hips to speeding our parents towards an untimely end, falls are fraught with consequences. Assessing falling hazards, installing some handlebars, and encouraging our parents to take calisthenic classes can go a long way to ensuring their safety. But there is another way we can help take care of our parents' brains. I figured it was having them do Wordle puzzles every day to stave off cognitive decline. But then Alan shared some surprising research.
One of the things that they just discovered was a correlation between high blood pressure and dementia. And so that's one just tiny little study that they figured out that if you keep your blood pressure below 140, you are, I think it's 3 times less likely to get dementia.
Amazing information. You mentioned earlier scams, and I remember these haunting words from my grandmother maybe 30 years ago. She was a very intelligent woman. She said, "Lisa, I am shocked by how many people are trying to scam me all the time." And this was 30 years ago.
Yeah, yeah, and it's way worse now.
Yeah, what can we do to help with that?
Yeah, I think the first thing is we have to be prepared to talk with the people we love about what the most current scams are. And also be sure people know that there is no shame in being scammed. I'll tell you what brought me to the field of aging. It was my grandfather. And he was, as you mentioned, incredibly intelligent guy. He got scammed in a big way by unscrupulous business people who basically lied to him and told him all of his investments were going to fall apart if he didn't do certain things. And so he got scammed out of a lot of money. Mm. And it wasn't his fault. He was in a position where he could no longer look after his own finances. But he kept all of that personal to himself, and he didn't really share with anybody the concerns that he had until way too late. And had he come forward without any shame, you know, maybe 2 or 3 years earlier and said, "Hey, I'm having a problem," we probably could have nipped that in the bud, and we probably could have figured out a way to stop the bleeding. So I think that's one of the very first steps, is know that anybody can be scammed, and scams are everywhere.
Scams are everywhere. Just this month, I've received texts telling me I was being fined for a toll I hadn't paid and that there was a problem delivering an Amazon package to my house and that I was having trouble with the IRS and immediately needed to call a certain phone number. Have you gotten these too? These scams are handcrafted to get us too scared or anxious to respond, so it's no wonder they work on us. There's no shame in that. The shame belongs to the people on the other end of the scam. It's important that our parents know that they need to question every pitch they receive, especially via phone or text. But if they do get caught in the clutches of these con artists, they also need to know that it wasn't their fault and that the sooner they tell someone, the better. Now, we've touched on a lot of common concerns we might have as our parents age, but there is still a biggie that I think we all dread. And that's when to take the keys away. Here's what Alan had to say about it.
Driving means independence. And when you're telling somebody you are no longer safe to drive, what you're really saying is your independence is at an end. And that is devastating. So, yeah, I mean, I think you have to have those conversations early and often. I think driving with your parents is really fun. Call them up and ask them to lunch and say, "Mom, can you drive?" And drive to a, you know, local restaurant. Is she freaking out about red lights? Is she having a terrible time trying to merge into traffic? Does she stop in the middle of the road for no good reason? Those are the kinds of things that if you can observe that, then you can say, you know, Mom, we just drove over here and I really felt like I was at risk the entire time. How do you feel when you're driving? Do you feel like you're at risk? Chances are very good they would say, yeah, I do feel like I'm at risk all the time, but I don't have any alternatives. Now we can get to address the issue rather than, you know, fist fighting over whether you're safe to drive or not drive. But if you can kind of identify that and say, you know, you don't feel like you're safe. Mm. So what can we do to make sure that you feel like you are safe?
Right.
Yeah. And most of our parents have never heard of Uber. They have no idea that there's a million ways to get to the grocery store.
There are so many other options.
Yeah, exactly.
I appreciate what Alan said. It's not necessarily the driving that our parents fear losing. It's their independence. So if we can provide other means for them to retain some autonomy, whether that's ride shares or chauffeured shopping trips or public transit assistance, our parents may just give up the keys with less of a fight. Alan says there is one more concern that should be on our radar since it often gets missed, and that is our parents' mental health.
I think, first of all, we have to recognize that among the most difficult things for older adults is depression and isolation. And it's really hard. And this hits men more than it hits women. Men tend to be very lonely and very depressed as they get older. They don't have the same kind of networks that many women have. And I'm talking in broad generalizations, obviously. You'll know your parent or your loved one or whoever it is better than anybody else. But we often don't recognize that older men are the number one group that commits suicide, for example.
Yeah, we don't talk about that.
Yeah, we don't talk about that at all, right? We think about young kids who are, you know, depressed and committing suicide. The most frequent suicide is among older men. And why is that? They're lonely. They're depressed. They're sad. They don't see a future ahead of themselves. As caregivers and loved ones, we have to be sensitive to those things. We can watch for that, making sure that once we see that, we step up a little bit and have that hard conversation. Dad, are you depressed? You know, how's your mental health feeling? That is not an easy, I'm just picturing it with my dad.
I know,
dad.
I'm like, you think talking about driving is hard.
No.
ask your dad, are you depressed? Do you want to talk about it?
Yeah, right?
Listen, that is not an easy conversation.
Men of a certain generation, right?
Right.
They don't.
Right.
I'm way too tough to have depression.
Or I just don't want to talk to you about it.
Yeah.
I might talk to somebody else. So I'm wondering what kind of like support we could give if that's the case and they don't want to come directly to their kids.
Yeah. Conversations with our medical professionals are hard to have because those medical professionals have HIPAA laws and other things.
Oh, true.
But, you know, if your parent is okay with you attending some of those doctor's visits, they can give permissions, you know, anybody can give permission to have somebody there with them to kind of be that interpreter. I would say if you can do it, do it.
If we thought there were stigmas around mental health in our generation, we haven't seen anything compared to those our parents experienced. And while they may be reticent to talk about how they're feeling with us, they may be more willing to speak to their doctors. Just something to keep in mind. Now, I know all of these concerns are a lot to juggle, and many of us will have to eventually outsource the care of our parents. Alan shared some considerations we should make when tackling this decision.
This is going to get hard, right? Anytime that a person is not able to feed themselves, if you notice that there's significant weight loss, that's a huge indication. If you come into the home and the people we love used to be pretty fastidious. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden the stove looks like it's been pretty greasily used and never washed. And you open the refrigerator and there's stuff in there that you're terrified may have been there for, you know, 4 weeks or things like that. Those are all little indications that there might be some real problems. I would also say cleanliness. If you're noticing that the person you love doesn't look like they've showered in a while, why is that? Maybe they're really afraid of tripping and falling. Maybe they can't get in and out of the tub the way that they used to. So, you know, if their clothes are dirty and their hair is greasy and they're not looking like they normally look, that's a pretty strong indication that there might be something up. And then, you know, just smells around the house. If there's sudden changes in the way that people are going to the restroom and things like that, or not being able to get to the restroom, a lot of those things are relatively easy to solve. But there are plenty of folks who, you know, they avoid drinking water because they're scared that they're going to have an accident at night. They're having a difficult time standing up from that low toilet that they used to have. Those are all indications that people might need more help. So in the profession, we call it activities of daily living. Mm-hmm. And so if any of those activities of daily living look like they are not being met, it might be time to have somebody from the Area Agency on Aging come in and do an assessment.
Could you just go through like a basic list of options that you might want to consider?
Yeah. The first is family caregiving, right? And for most people, that's kind of typical of what they need, is somebody who can help them with their groceries or help them with their housework or
like
whatever it happens to
or
be.
Or maybe some food prep.
Yeah, absolutely. And so finding that service team, great. If for any reason you don't have that or things are becoming more complicated, well, then you can look to some in-home services. And a great way to do that is to have a conversation with the physician of the loved one, because many times, I mean, these are very expensive services.
Yeah, they are.
But if the doctor can say, hey, this person has that need and they may be forced to have much more extensive institutional care, they can actually write prescriptions, and Medicare will pay sometimes for these things, for a home health aide to come in or a cleaning aide to come in. And there's plenty of opportunity along those lines where you don't have to have, you know, a full-time nurse in the person's home. Maybe they need 10 hours a week, and you can either private pay for that or maybe Medicare will pay for that. But having that intervention is a really good thing. And there's lots of agencies out there that will assist with that as well. And thinking about a doctor can really help you with that, and an agency can help you with that. There's lots of those. And then if you really do need to get to that step of saying, okay, we really need full-time care and maybe in an institutional setting, do a lot of background, talk to people, go into a variety of different settings and just test things out, see what the people who are in those settings, see how they feel about it. Yeah, there's lots of really, really good providers out there.
There is no one-size-fits-all when it comes to care for our parents. Some parents may just need some social interaction and a shopping trip here or there. Some may need in-home housekeeping or health care, and some may need to live in a care facility. The point to remember here is that there are options for our parents, and there are resources, including the Area Agencies on Aging, to help us determine what type of care our parents need and how to provide it. I know it feels big and even overwhelming, but I appreciate what Alan said to this point.
I really wish that all caregivers, all kids would know there are resources available to you. Many of them are not going to be perfect, but a lot of them are going to be better than just trying to go it alone.
The tables will turn. We will need to help take care of the parents that once took care of us. But whether we realize it or not, we are already caretakers. Right now, the care we provide may just be a phone call to mom and dad or a lawn mow on the weekends. But there are a few things we need to have on our radars. First, like Alan said, find your area agency on aging. Give them a call or look over their website. It's a really great place to start. Next, we need to assemble a team and get advanced medical directives and durable powers of attorney in place. These will ensure our parents' wishes are respected. We'll also need to address safety concerns like falling hazards, scam risks, driving abilities, and mental health struggles. And of course, we always need to be watching for signs that our parents may need more care than they are receiving. There's no sugarcoating the reality that navigating these changes as caregivers will be hard. I'm frankly dreading some of the conversations I'm going to have with my parents. And yet, I also know that caregiving can be a sacred and even lovely experience. But we can't do it without help. This conversation with Alan was good for me because it made me realize that as we enter this new phase of life with elderly parents, we aren't alone. We aren't without resources. We aren't without hope. And the parents that we love deserve both.
The Lisa Show is a production of BYU Radio, hosted by Lisa Valentine Clark. This episode was produced by Erica Price, with help from Becca Hurley-Lung, Blake Morse, and Kenny Mears, with post-production by Gracie Davis. A special thank you to our guest, Alan Ormsby. Alan is the State Director of AARP for Utah. A link to the AARP website, as well as to our newsletter, will be in our show notes. Be sure to check out our new podcast, Proofread, a podcast to help you read more of what you love and less of what you don't, because life's too short for the wrong book. Find it anywhere you get your podcasts. As always, thanks for your messages. We read them all, and thanks for listening.
Do you find yourself avoiding the news because of how depressive and divisive it all seems, but still want to stay informed? You are not alone. Top of Mind, a BYU Radio original podcast, understands how polarizing these conversations can be and wants to help you engage in the challenge while seeking understanding. With the goal of developing empathy for others, Top of Mind helps you clarify your own views, become an effective advocate for the things that you care about, and challenges your way of thinking so you can become a better citizen and a kinder neighbor. Listen to Top of Mind now on the BYU Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.